Welcome to the deep dive, where we try to cut through the noise and get straight to what matters. We've all been there, right? Staring at that screen, maybe catching a glimpse of someone's very lived-in home office, or, you know, secretly wearing pajama bottoms under the desk. But let's be honest, sometimes those virtual meetings feel, well, about as exciting as watching paint dry.
It's true. They can really drag.
And it's become this sort of background hum, hasn't it? The Zoom fatigue we all talk about and that constant, like, low-level stress of trying to look poised and professional on camera. But here's the thing we're digging into today. It isn't just about hiding the laundry pile. It's actually about how you can genuinely connect with people online, how you can make sure you look as polished virtually as you do in person and really master that digital presence.
Exactly. And for this deep dive, we're drawing on some really great stuff from Chapter 10, Mastering Virtual Communication. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, basic tips. It's more like a playbook, really.
Yeah.
Packed with practical strategies for today's virtual and hybrid world. Think of it as a shortcut, maybe, to getting these essential skills nailed down.
Totally. So by the end of our chat today, you should have a really clear, actionable roadmap, something to take those virtual interactions from, frankly, draining and frustrating, to actually productive, engaging, and maybe even, you know, influential. So let's get to it. Okay, so virtual meetings, they're everywhere, but why do so many just fizzle out? You mentioned the source material says they don't have to be that way. What's the core reason?
Well, it goes a bit deeper than just the screen. Basically, without that physical presence, our brains are working overtime. We miss all those little nonverbal cues, the shared energy in a room, all that stuff we take for granted. And that extra mental effort, that cognitive load, just leads to distraction and, well, people checking out, which is why planning isn't just nice. It's absolutely critical for keeping people engaged and getting things done.
Right. So that planning starts before the invite even goes out. Defining objectives. We all know we should do it. But why do people still kind of mess this up virtually?
I think virtually it's even easier for things to drift. So you really have to ask, what is the one key thing we need to achieve here?
Mm.
Is it finalize the Q3 marketing goals, or maybe assign clear action items for Project X? Getting that specific upfront prevents that scope creep, you know, keeps it focused and hopefully shorter.
And that leads straight into the agenda, doesn't it? Sending it in advance.
Yes, absolutely. At least 24 hours before.
Yeah.
But not just any agenda. Make it clear. Scannable. Think. Welcome and check-in. 5 minutes. Then maybe deep dive, Q3 strategy, 15 minutes. And finally, action steps, 5 minutes. It sets expectations, lets people prepare mentally, and sort of primes everyone for efficiency.
And efficiency often means keeping it short, right? Less is definitely more with virtual meetings.
Oh, for sure. Our attention spans online are different. 30 minutes or less is often the sweet spot. It forces you to stick to the essentials, respects people's time, and honestly keeps the energy levels up. It combats that fatigue we talked about.
But you still need people to actually participate, not just stare blankly. How do you actively encourage that engagement?
Yeah, you have to kind of engineer it. Don't just ask any questions at the end. Pause regularly. Maybe call on someone specifically, like, Sarah, what's your perspective on
this?
Or use quick polls, little surveys, anything to pull people back in and make them feel actively involved.
And then the ending. Crucial. Never end vaguely.
Never. That's where things fall apart. Always summarize. Okay, so Josh has the budget by Wednesday. Amy's got the timeline by tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Assign those action items clearly. Who does what by when? It avoids confusion later.
And that follow-up email seals the deal.
It does. And make it super scannable. Bullet points, clear actions. Like, Josh, but it would. Amy, timeline, tomorrow, next meeting. Mon, 10 a.m. Quick, easy reference. Keeps the momentum going.
You know, if you just apply those steps, clear objective, good agenda, short time, active engagement, clear summary, quick follow-up, even a routine team status update feels completely different. Much more productive. Okay, let's switch gears slightly. On-camera presence. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. We've all seen it, haven't we? The silhouette look or just someone's forehead. But the good news is you don't need a fancy studio setup to fix it.
Right. And it matters more than people think. Good on-camera presence isn't just vanity. It subconsciously signals professionalism, trustworthiness, respect even. It helps people focus on your message, not get distracted by weird lighting or framing.
So, lighting. Let's talk lighting. It's huge. What's the key takeaway?
Face the light. That's rule number one.
Mm.
Ideally, soft, diffused light, like from a window with sheer curtains, or a simple lamp placed slightly above and in front of you. Avoid strong light behind you that creates the silhouette. The goal is even, flattering light on your face. It makes you look clearer, more trustworthy, less, well, creepy, as the source puts it.
Okay, face the light. Got it. What about framing? How much of me should people see?
Yeah, the floating forehead isn't ideal. Aim for the camera to be at eye level. Stack some books on your laptop if you need to. And frame yourself so people see your head, your shoulders, maybe a little bit of your torso. About 18 to 24 inches away is usually good. It makes you look grounded, present, like you're part of the conversation.
And eye contact. This one feels weird virtually, but it's important, right? Looking at the camera.
It feels super weird at first. But yes, look at the camera lens, not at the faces on your screen, or definitely not at your own picture. Looking at the lens creates the illusion you're looking directly at them. It builds that connection, that trust. A little trick. Put a small sticker or sticky note right next to your camera lens as a reminder. Glance at the screen, sure, but keep coming back to the lens.
Okay, sticker trick. I like that. What about the background? Does it really matter?
It absolutely does. Subconsciously, it sends messages. Keep it simple, tidy, neutral, a plain wall, a neat bookshelf, maybe professional virtual background if it looks realistic. Just avoid anything cluttered or distracting. A messy background can imply, you know, a messy approach.
And clothes. Do I need a full suit if I'm working from home?
Huh. Well, maybe not a full suit, unless that's your usual office vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely dress professionally on top. Think business casual, solid, muted colors usually work best, less distracting than busy patterns. It shows respect for the meeting, for the other people. What you wear below the camera is your own business.
Secret sweatpants for the win.
Okay, last bit on this. Nonverbal communication.
Yeah, you need to kind of amplify it slightly for the camera. Sit up straight. Maybe lean in a little to show engagement. Use natural hand gestures, but keep them mostly within the frame. Avoid looking too static or stiff. It helps convey energy and interest.
So if you pull all that together, good light, good framing, eye contact with the lens, clean background, professional top, engaged posture, you instantly look more credible, more engaging.
Exactly. It sets the stage for your message to land effectively.
Right. Now let's tackle the big one, Zoom fatigue. That feeling after a day of calls where you feel like you've run a marathon, it's real.
It is absolutely real, and there's science behind it. Your brain is working much harder in virtual meetings. It's trying to interpret these like pixelated faces, figure out turn-taking without the usual cues, compensate for the lack of shared space. It's a huge cognitive load, and that constant effort is what leads to exhaustion. Understanding that is key.
So how do we fight back? What's the first step? Shorter meetings. We touched on this, but it's crucial for energy management too. Aim for 20, 30 minutes. Keep them focused on a single purpose. It respects people's limited cognitive bandwidth.
And breaks. Are they actually important between calls?
Essential. Even just 5, 10 minutes. But use them properly. Don't just check email. Rest your eyes, look out the window at something distant. Stretch. Hydrate. Get away from the screen. It's like a reset button for your brain. These micro breaks make a surprisingly big difference.
What about making the meetings themselves less draining? Does participation help?
Definitely. Passive listening is tiring. When you're actively involved, asking questions, participating in polls, joining a quick breakout, your brain stays more engaged. And paradoxically, it feels less draining because you have more agency. So build in that interaction.
And the temptation to multitask. Checking email during a call. Bad idea.
Huge energy drain. You think you're being efficient, but your brain is rapidly switching contexts, and that burns mental fuel. Close other tabs. Maybe take notes by hand instead of typing. Commit to being fully present in that meeting. You'll feel less frazzled.
Makes sense. What about the physical setup? Does my chair actually impact fatigue?
It really does. Physical comfort matters for mental endurance. Is your screen at eye level so you're not straining your neck? Do you have a supportive chair? Is the room temperature okay? Good lighting. Optimizing your physical environment reduces unnecessary drains on your system, freeing up energy for focus.
And maybe, sometimes, just pick up the phone.
Yes. Consider if every single interaction needs video. Video calls demand constant visual processing. For quick updates, one-on-ones where you don't need to share visuals, an audio-only call can be a great way to reduce that visual strain. Give your eyes a break.
So it's about being intentional, isn't it? Shorter meetings, real breaks, active participation, no multitasking, comfy setup, and using audio sometimes. Manage your energy proactively.
That's exactly it. Taking control of those factors.
Okay, let's talk digital etiquette or netiquette. Why is this so important beyond just being polite?
Because in the virtual world, your etiquette is a huge part of your professional image. There are fewer cues, right? So good netiquette prevents misunderstandings, minimizes those annoying distractions, and ensures communication stays clear and respectful. It builds trust.
First rule seems obvious, but maybe isn't always followed. respect speaking turns.
Yeah, don't cut people off. The little delays in audio can make interruptions worse online. Use the raise hand feature if there is one. Wait for a clear pause. Let others finish their thought. It shows respect and keeps the conversation flowing better.
And the mute button, our best friend.
Absolutely. Mute yourself whenever you're not speaking. Nobody needs to hear your dog barking, your keyboard clickings, or, you know, other background noises. It reduces distraction for everyone and lowers that collective cognitive load. And don't be afraid to politely ask someone else to mute if needed.
We've mentioned background and attire before, but it fits here too, right, as etiquette.
Definitely. It signals respect for the interaction. Tidy, neutral background, professional attire, at least from the waist up. It just shows you're taking the meeting seriously and helps maintain a professional atmosphere.
Punctuality and preparation still apply online.
Maybe even more so. Virtual doesn't mean casual timekeeping. Join a few minutes early, test your tech, make sure your camera and mic work, have the agenda handy. Being prepared shows respect for everyone else's time.
How about keeping things on track? Meetings can wander.
Yeah. Gently guide things back if they stray too far. Something like, that's an interesting point. Maybe we can park that for offline and come back to the agenda. Yeah, it keeps the meeting productive without shutting people down. Suggest follow-ups for unrelated topics.
And finally, the chat function. Any rules there?
Be mindful. Avoid typing in all cap BS if it feels like shouting. Keep messages concise and clear. And maintain a professional, courteous tone. Think, could you please clarify that instead of just, what? Meek? Remember, it's often saved.
Right. So good etiquette is really about being mindful, respectful, and professional in all those little interactions, muting, waiting your turn, being prepared, staying focused. It all adds up.
It really does. It makes the whole experience smoother and more professional for everyone.
Okay. Last big area, hybrid meetings. These can be tricky. Half the team in the room, half remote. How do we make these work well?
They are tricky because you're merging two totally different dynamics. And the risk is always that the remote people feel left out, like second-class citizens. The key challenge is bridging that gap, making sure everyone feels equally seen, heard, and able to contribute, regardless of where they are.
So number one priority must be equal participation. How do you actively do that?
You have to design for it. Don't just rely on remote people to jump in. Proactively solicit their input. Maybe alternate between asking someone in the room and someone remote. Assign someone, maybe a moderator, to specifically watch the remote participants for cues they want to speak and ensure they can actually see and hear properly.
Which brings us to technology. It's got to be good, right?
It's critical. You need good quality microphones that capture the whole room's sound clearly, a good camera, maybe one that shows the entire in-person group, and importantly, a large screen in the room displaying the remote folks so they feel present. Using tools like shared digital whiteboards also helps level the playing field for collaboration.
And setting ground rules beforehand.
Super helpful. Establish clear guidelines, like maybe everyone uses the virtual hand raise, whether in person or remote. Define how the chat will be used. Just setting those expectations up front prevents a lot of confusion and awkwardness.
As a leader or participant, balancing your attention must be tough.
It takes conscious effort. It's natural to focus on the people physically present. You have to fight that bias. Make eye contact with the camera for remote folks. Glance at their screen regularly. Explicitly ask remote attendees for their thoughts, maybe even by name. Show you're aware of them.
And activities within the meeting, can they be made more inclusive?
Yes. Plan things that inherently involve everyone. Quick polls work well. Breakout rooms that mix in-person and remote people, using laptops for the in-person folks, collaborative document editing in real time. Anything that requires simultaneous input from everyone, breaking down that physical barrier.
And like all meetings, clear summary and follow-up.
Especially important in hybrid, the potential for miscommunication is higher. So clearly summarize decisions, action items, deadlines. Send that follow-up email promptly, making it crystal clear who's doing what. It ensures everyone is on the same page, regardless of location.
Right. So running a good hybrid meeting means consciously designing for inclusion, using tech smartly, setting rules, balancing attention, using shared activities, and being extra clear on outcomes. It is possible.
Absolutely. It takes deliberate effort, but it makes a world of difference.
Okay, so let's just quickly recap. We've covered a lot today, really digging into how to master virtual communication. We talked about planning and running, truly engaging virtual meetings, seriously boosting your on-camera presence, strategies to actually combat that dreaded Zoom fatigue, the nuts and bolts of digital etiquette, And finally, navigating those potentially tricky hybrid environments effectively. These skills are like table stakes now, wouldn't you say?
I'd say they're more than table stakes, they're differentiators. Mastering these things genuinely improves productivity, team collaboration, your own professional image. It just makes all your digital interactions significantly more effective. It's about moving from just coping to actually excelling.
Yeah, excelling. I like that. And maybe the biggest takeaway, the thing to really think about is this. Mastering virtual communication isn't just about being more efficient or, avoiding those awkward silences. It's actually about rehumanizing how we interact digitally, making sure our presence, our ideas, they actually land. It's about building real trust and connection, even through a screen, making sure that your virtual self is just as impactful as your in-person self.
Well said. It's about genuine connection.
So our challenge to you is to take these strategies, these ideas, and start applying them consistently. Keep refining, keep practicing. You really do have the tools now to lead, to communicate effectively, no matter what kind of virtual or hybrid setting you find yourself in. Until next time on The Deep Dive, keep diving deep.